Hey, this is Greg Little from Bethany Baptist Church. I'm so thankful that you decided to join us on this podcast. I trust that the Lord will use it in your life to encourage you, strengthen you, and challenge you wherever you are in your walk with Him. For more information about Bethany, you can visit us online at bethanybc.ca. And now let's open our hearts and minds to what the Lord has for us. We're in Matthew chapter 15 this morning, starting in verse 21 and going down to verse number 28. So let's read that together as we begin. Then Jesus went thence and departed into the coast of Tyre and Sidon. And behold, a woman of Canaan came out of the same coast and cried unto him, saying, Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with a devil. But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and besought him, saying, Send her away, for she crieth after us. But he answered and said, I am not sent, but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Then came she and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, It is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it to dogs. And she said, Truth, Lord. Yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table. And Jesus answered and said unto her, O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was, made whole from that very hour. And Jesus departed from thence and came nigh unto the Sea of Galilee and went up into a mountain and sat down there. And great multitudes came unto him, having with them those that were lame, blind, dumb, maimed, and many others, and cast them down at Jesus' feet, and he healed them. Insomuch that the multitude wondered when they saw the dumb to speak and maimed to behold, the lame to walk and the blind to see, and they glorified the God of Israel. Let me ask you this as we begin. Do you remember your first job? Does everyone remember the first job that they had? Think back to when you were little. I remember the first jobs I had before I got my first real job. I started off with a paper route, getting up first thing in the morning. I don't know if they do that anymore. Do they do that, delivering papers? I don't think they do the same way. But I had a job getting up, delivering papers in the morning. And then in the summer, I would cut my neighbor's lawns for some extra money. My brother and I, when we were in, I would have been in the late years of junior high school, we started a green bin cleaning business in our neighborhood. In Nova Scotia, everyone puts all their compost in a green bin, and it goes out once every couple of weeks. And we did that about one time, and we realized how disgusting and smelly those bins were, and we quickly went on to another job. But I remember my very first real job that I got when I was old enough. I followed in my brother's footsteps and began working at, working at Walmart. That was my very first job. There was a Walmart in Lower Sackville that I worked at, and I worked just about every area. I think I started there, I told my kids a little while ago, I started at $5.75 an hour as a cashier. That was my very first job working at Walmart, and I stayed there for quite a while. I ended up working all the way, almost all the way through college, and I worked just about every different department in the store, just about everything. I loved all of it. I enjoyed working there. But I think my two favorite places to work in Walmart, they trained me on both of these, was layaway. Do you remember layaway? Did they do that here at the Walmart? I don't think they do that anymore. You can't do that. I loved working there, though. That and then the returns desk was also a place that I enjoyed working because it was busy all the time and you dealt with all sorts of people and all sorts of things. And I remember specifically one time, very vividly actually, that this man came in and I was working the return desk. And this was not uncommon. This is before they put in all their rules and regulations about returns and such. But he came in wanting to return a obviously very old, very used pair of sneakers. And he had obviously had them for a number of years. But he wanted to return them, and the problem was that he didn't even buy them at Walmart. He had bought them at a different store, like Zellers or Kmart or Woolco. You remember all those old places. So he obviously bought them somewhere else, and he wanted to return them to Walmart. And so I told him, obviously that's not something we can do. I can't return that. And I remember very vividly, he got quite upset. He got quite angry. And he started to make a scene in the front of the store. And he was yelling and he was angry. And so I did what we were supposed to do. I called my manager. The manager came down and they started getting into it. And I'm just kind of standing back now watching this whole thing unfold. I'm like, is this really happening? Like over a pair of two-year-old shoes, this is actually happening. And I was watching. All of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I saw, and I got out of the way quick enough because he threw the shoes at me and then walked out of the store. And we were just kind of left standing. Everybody was kind of watching at that point. And just we were left thinking to ourselves, you know, did that actually just happen? Did he really just do that? Like it was a strangely tense moment for really no reason at all. And in a sense, that's kind of how I picture this account in Matthew chapter 15. Now, there's no shoe throwing, there's no name calling, none of those things are happening. But it is, as you first read through that account, you'll notice, you probably did as we read it, that it seems to be kind of this tense interaction between Jesus and the disciples and this Canaanite woman, that she comes to Jesus and she's asking him to heal her daughter, and he just ignores her, and then basically says, in verse number 26, it's not meet to take the children's bread and to give it to dogs. And I'm sure that everybody, as they're listening to this interaction, is kind of like, did he really just say that? Is this really happening? Is this what's going on in this account? It almost, I don't know about you, but when you first read those verses, it almost seems out of character for Jesus, doesn't it? Like, why would he respond that way? Why would he say those things? There's this real tension here. And the disciples even are confused by this. And they begin to be annoyed with this woman's constant crying out, and they want her sent away, but she doesn't go anywhere. She keeps crying out. And unlike the centurion at first, anyways, unlike the other Gentiles that Jesus has healed, that intervened in their situation, unlike those different situations, Jesus basically refuses to do anything for this woman. And I was thinking this way, we might read this account, and unless we truly understand the mercy of God and the compassion of Christ, and unless we really understand the mission that Jesus is on, we might be left wondering the same thing. Did that actually happen? Did he really say that? It doesn't make sense. In fact, there are commentators that I read who in this passage are basically accusing Jesus of racist and bigoted prejudice toward this Canaanite woman. They accuse him that way. And let me just say this as we begin. Jesus was perfectly right in everything he did. Right? We know that. Jesus was perfect. He is the perfect, sinless, holy Son of God. So those that would accuse him here of some sort of wrongdoing or prejudice or bigotry in his response to this woman, they're not interpreting this passage of Scripture in the right way. They're not looking at it in the proper way. Racism, and I understand that's kind of a buzzword in this day and age, that everything is racist. Nothing is racist because everything is racist, right? We hear that all the time, but prejudice based on skin color or ethnicity or background or nationality has no place in the kingdom of God. That's not what we find here. In fact, the point of this account, as we'll see in just a minute, is that God's grace is available to all people in all places at all times, regardless of who they are or what their ethnicity is or their background or nationality. So don't misinterpret this passage that way. And we'll look at the interpretation here as we make our way through. So there is some tension in these verses, but that tension, I believe, is resolved when we understand the humility and the faith of this woman and the mercy and the compassion of Christ. So let's just take a few minutes. We're going to work our way through this passage and the narrative here, and then we'll kind of bring it all together at the end this morning. So notice, first of all, that there's a desperate need here. We see the desperate need of a mother in verses 21 and 22. Jesus went thence, in verse 21, and departed into the coast of Tyre and Sidon. The last time that we were given an idea of where Jesus was geographically, he was in Gennesaret, a town that, a town that's on the western shore, the northwestern shore of the Sea of Galilee. Remember, they had just crossed the sea. Peter had walked on water. We have that whole account there. Jesus had confronted the scribes and the Pharisees, and they had completely rejected him. And so I have a map there. I don't know if you can see. Jesus is down, see if you can see that, down here. Can you see that? There's the Sea of Galilee. He's on Gennesaret, and he makes his way all the way up here through the mountains to Tyre and Sidon, which are coastal cities. This would be in modern-day Lebanon. So it's quite a journey for Jesus to go from Gennesaret, the Sea of Galilee, all the way up to the area of Tyre and Sidon. Now, just keep in mind that a couple of things. Number one, it was a difficult and long trip to get there. This is about 50 to 70 miles on foot through the mountains. It is a challenging journey. And notice, secondly, and we understand in Tyre and Sidon that Jesus is no longer in Israel. He is outside of the boundaries. He's in that area, which at that time was called Phoenicia. And so he's outside of Israel. He's in Phoenicia. He's in a different place. And as he's there, it says in verse 22, a woman of Canaan came out of the same coast and cried unto him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil." In Mark's account, a parallel passage, Mark actually refers to this woman as both a Greek, a Hellenistic Greek, and a Syro-Phoenician. Matthew here calls her a Canaanite. We don't know much about her except that she was a foreigner. She was not a Jewish person. She was of Phoenicia, a Syro-Phoenician, a Canaanite. She was a Gentile. Okay, she came from a different religious background. There was really nothing that this woman had in common with Jesus and his disciples. They were vastly different in many different ways. But there are a couple of things that are quite obvious about her. First of all, it's obvious that she has a deep need. There is something that she truly needs from Jesus. She comes to Jesus and she's crying out, what are the words? "Have mercy on me. Jesus, have mercy on me." Eleison is the word there. Show compassion to me. I know I don't deserve it, but please help me. In fact, that's the word that's used in verse 25. Lord, help me. Show compassion to me. Have mercy on me. And that word, especially help, there carries the idea of a critical, urgent need. She had a great need. Jesus, help me. It's urgent. It's critical. Why? Because her daughter was grievously vexed with the devil. In other words, those words, grievously vexed, have the idea of being cruelly tormented. Her daughter was being tormented in a miserable and a cruel way by a demon. And we've talked about this idea of demon possession before. We don't know exactly what this demon is doing to her daughter. There are other scriptures that give you an idea of what demons and devils could do to those that they possess. But this daughter, we know she was in a place of cruel torment by this demon. And so she's in this place of a completely desperate need in a terrible situation. Not only is she in a desperate need, but notice also she cries out in a desperate manner. It says in verse 22, she cried unto him. In verse 23, it says that the disciples came to Jesus and said, she crieth after us. Just to get an idea of what's going on here, the word that is used for cry has the idea of shrieking, of crying out emotionally and urgently and loudly. So she's crying nonstop after Jesus. Have mercy on me. Help me. I get the picture in my mind that Jesus and his disciples are walking. And by the way, Mark tells us that they had come apart for a time to get away from the crowds and all of the people that had been following them. They're trying to go somewhere where they're alone, where they're by themselves for a period of time. And here's this woman following them, crying, shouting, help me. Have mercy on me, over and over again. Now, Jesus doesn't answer her at first. It says in verse 23, he answered her not a word. And it leads the disciples to come to Jesus and say, Jesus, just send her away. And by the way, the word that they use there for send her away is from the Greek word luao, which means to loose. So there, you don't necessarily see it there, but they could be saying to Jesus, in a sense, Jesus, just heal her daughter and send her away. Get it over with. Just loose her daughter. Just free her. Just unbind her. That's the idea of that word. Just do what she's asking for and send her away. Just do what she wants because she's driving us crazy. It's like when we're in the car and we're driving somewhere. And the difference between me and Amanda is Amanda's very good at blocking out the noise in the car. She's very good at tuning that out. She doesn't even hear it. But I hear everything that's going on. I have movies memorized that I've never seen because the kids are watching it and I can't tune it out. I can't block out the noise. I hear everything in the car. And so we'll be driving and one of the kids will be like, Mom, Mom, Mom. And she doesn't hear because she's tuned out all the noise. She's doing something. And I'll look over at her and be like, would you just answer them? They're driving me nuts. I think that's the idea here, is that this woman's crying and coming after and following Jesus and the disciples. And Jesus isn't answering her. And the disciples say, Jesus, would you just do something? She's driving us crazy. Send her away. Now just think about the desperate, hopeless place that this woman is in that would cause her to respond, to come to Jesus in this way. And by the way, it wasn't for herself. It was for her daughter that she was crying out. You know, sometimes our biggest needs and our greatest prayers and sources of desperation and cries for intervention are not for ourselves, but for our children. And that's what we find here in this passage. Many of you have been in that place. Some of you are still there. Maybe it's a situation in their life or a situation in your life that seems out of control. You tried every angle. You've exhausted every means. You're still in need. And you're crying out, Jesus, help me. Do something about this. Show mercy. Show compassion to me. Help the situation in my life or my child's life or whatever it might be. Lord, do something. That's where we find this woman, in this place of desperate need, crying out in a desperate manner. But notice also, to her credit, she comes in the right way to the right person. Notice that she comes to Jesus humbly. She says, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou Son of David." She comes with a recognition of who Jesus actually is. It says in Mark 7, again, the parallel passage, that this woman had heard of Jesus. She had heard the stories. She had heard the accounts of his healing. She had heard of what he had taught, all of these things. She knew who he was. She knew what he could do. So she comes to him. And even as a Gentile, she comes to Jesus with this Jewish title. Now, Son of David, that title is recognizing the Messiahship of Jesus. She calls him Lord a couple of times in this passage. She recognizes that this is the one, that he is her only hope, that without him, there is no hope, there is no healing, there is nothing. Without his compassion, she is lost. She is totally hopeless. So she recognizes who he is and comes to him with her need. And by the way, isn't that true for us as well this morning? That without the grace of God, without the mercy of God, without his compassion in our life, where would we be? We needed it the same. Listen, we are only where we are this morning because of the mercy and the grace and the compassion of God. We need him the same way that she did. See, that there's such a contrast here to the Pharisees at the beginning of the chapter. They thought they had everything they needed. They had all the traditions of the elders. They had all the rituals, all the ceremonies. They had everything that they needed, so they didn't need Jesus. But this woman understood that without Jesus, she had nothing. There was no hope. She recognizes her need. She recognizes that Jesus was her only hope. I want you to notice, secondly, not only the desperation of this woman, but notice the confusing response of Jesus, of the Savior. In verse 23, we already read it, that he answered her not a word. And the disciples come to him and they say, "Jesus, just send her away, heal her, do what you have to do. She's driving us crazy." And Jesus says to his disciples in verse 24, "I am not sent but to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Not, by the way, not the lost sheep in Israel, but the lost sheep of Israel. What Jesus is saying here is that his earthly ministry was primarily directed toward the Jewish people. It was a direct fulfillment of God's covenant with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. As he came to earth, his earthly ministry, he came unto his own. His ministry was directed at the Jewish people. The phrase "lost sheep" shows the spiritual condition of those in Israel. They were God's chosen nation, but they had strayed from him. He had come unto his own, but his own received him not. They were lost. They had strayed. The Pharisees had just demonstrated earlier in this chapter their complete rejection of Jesus Christ as the Messiah. His ministry was to fulfill that covenant promise to Israel, the promise that would also be a blessing to the Gentiles, but it wasn't a promise made to the Gentiles. It was a promise made to Israel. Well, she comes in verse 25, says, "Then came she and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me." She's continuing to come after him, but notice his response in verse 26. He answered and said, "It is not meet to take the children's bread and to cast it to dogs." Now let me illustrate this way. How many of you have dogs at home? Does anyone have a dog at home? I know a lot of us have dogs at home. How many of us have dogs and children, or had dogs and children at one point? All right. Okay, there we go. We have a dog, and we have multiple cats, and we also have multiple children at home. And I don't think any of us would prioritize our animals over our children. right? No? Okay. Not quite as sure about that one. We would, we shouldn't. We wouldn't prioritize. I wouldn't prioritize Macy, our dog, over our four children. I love our dog, but I do not love our dog more than our children. I hope that's assuring to you children this morning. I wouldn't choose the dog over you. And none of us would probably choose our dogs over our children. But the thought of is this. All of us would take care of our pets. In fact, that's... The word that Jesus uses for dog here is not the same as the word that was often used for dog. The word that's often used for dog, I believe it's kurion, speaks to that wild stray dog. That's not the word that Jesus uses. The word that Jesus uses for dogs here has the idea of a little pet, a household pet. It's a different kind of word for dog, a puppy, a household pet. We would all take care of our pets. We all desire to take care of our dogs. I know we have that desire, but we would never deprive our children in order to be able to do that. Like if I had to choose between feeding my children or my dogs or my animals, I would always choose my children. They would always eat first. I would prioritize them above the dogs. I'm going to make sure the dog is fed, but I'm not going to give him food that is meant for the children. I'm going to feed them first. In fact, if you're in our home with us during a mealtime, you will find that our dog does not sit at the table with us. She does not have her own chair. She doesn't eat meals with us. She does sometimes sit under the table. And because I still have children at home, she does get fed, sometimes on purpose, sometimes not on purpose. But she does eat some of those crumbs that fall. The point is this, I'm gonna feed the dog, but I'm gonna prioritize my children over my pet. That what Jesus is doing here, I want you to understand this. What Jesus is doing here, it's not a racial thing. It's not prejudiced towards her background or her ethnicity or her nationality. I think what Jesus is saying this, my responsibility, my priority. Remember, I was sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. My responsibility, my priority is to Israel first. It's to the Jews. My ministry right now is to the Jews. Now, they rejected him, and eventually the gospel went out to the Gentiles and all people. But Jesus is saying, my priority in my ministry is to Israel first and then to everybody else. That's what Jesus is saying in these verses. He came first to his own people. It was his priority. So notice, thirdly, the humility and the faith of the woman. I love how she responds. Many people might hear that and say, well, I'm offended, and leave. You can't talk to me that way. But that's not how this woman responds. She says in verse 27, truth, Lord. That may be true. I understand that the Jews are your first priority, and I'm a Gentile. I'm kind of outside of that. It's true. I understand that. And yet, the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from their master's table. In Mark 7, again, a parallel account, verse 27, Jesus says, when he's giving the example of the food given to the children and then to the dogs, he says this, let the children first be filled. And I think the woman capitalizes on that word first. Like, yes, let them be filled first. That's true. She recognizes she's not of the house of Israel, that she is, in that sense, an outsider. And yet she takes the words of Jesus, the illustration that he gives, that and says, yes, you don't feed your dogs to the detriment of your children. I understand that. But little dogs have a place in your home too. Those who own dogs make sure they are fed. Yes, I don't have any claim as belonging to the chosen people, to the nation of Israel. But surely even the dogs get fed. Surely there's crumbs left over. There has to be something for me too. She's not presuming on her position, but she's appealing to the mercy and compassion of Christ. Is there not something for me too? Notice in verse 28, the compassion of Jesus. Then Jesus answered and said unto her, O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. And her daughter was made whole from that very hour. This woman's faith was persistent. And even in spite of all the roadblocks and the obstacles she faced in having such faith, she continued to believe. She continued to come to Jesus. And Jesus shows compassion on her. And he heals her daughter immediately. Mark tells us when she goes from that place, she goes home and she finds her daughter laying on a bed, the devil having departed from her. She was healed in that very moment. Jesus heals her daughter. Jesus, in his compassion, met the need of this Canaanite woman. The rest of the verses here, all the way down to 31, Jesus goes out, Matthew tells us, he goes out to this Gentile nation and the areas around, and up until verse 31, he heals the lame and the blind and the maimed and all those that were brought to him, insomuch that all the people, when they see this, when they see the compassion of Christ and the work that he is doing, it says at the end of verse 31 that they glorify the God of Israel. God is glorified as Jesus does this work. We see just a small glimpse here of the universality of the gospel, that it goes out to all people. Jesus came to the Jews, yes, but ultimately the gospel went out to all people. I want to make just a couple of quick applications from this passage. Just three things. First of all, notice this. Jesus responds to faith, not nationality, not heritage, not background. Jesus responds to faith, nothing else. There's such a contrast between this woman and the Jewish religious leadership that's seen earlier in the chapter. They thought that because they were of the seed of Abraham, that they were of the nation nationality of Israel, that they were better off than everybody else. They kept the tradition of the elders. They were from, remember Paul said, I was of the right stock, of the right tribe, of the right nation, of the right nationality. I had all those things going for me. And they were from all of those things, it was true, but they had completely rejected the Messiah, and therefore they themselves were rejected by him. They were lost because they trusted more in their nationality and their spiritual heritage than they did in the Messiah himself. And yet here's this woman who very quickly realizes and understands that she doesn't have the right nationality. She didn't have the same, in that sense, the same privileges and standing before God. But she had faith. And she believed that Jesus was who he said he was, that he could do what he said he could do. And Jesus responds to her faith and heals her daughter. Let me remind you this morning that God still responds to faith. It's not about my nationality. It's not about my spiritual heritage, my godly upbringing. It's not about my adherence to the law or any other exterior mark. What God responds to is genuine faith and belief in him. You are who you say you are, and I believe it. I confess it. All of us need to come to the place where we recognize that we need something outside of ourselves for our salvation. That we can't do it by ourselves. And it's not my family, it's not my church, it's not my upbringing, it's not my good works, it's nothing, it's only through faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And Jesus responds to that kind of faith. I think there's also, secondly, a lesson here between great faith and little faith. I find it interesting. You know, there was two people during Jesus' earthly ministry that he commends for great faith. Do you know who they were? It's this woman and a Roman centurion. There's two people and they're both Gentiles. And Jesus says to both of them, you have great faith. Both outside the chosen nation, both Gentiles. And yet, you remember just a couple of chapters ago when Peter stepped outside of the boat and he walked on water? I might say he demonstrated great faith. And yet he looked away and he began to sink and Jesus pulls him up, pulls him back on the boat. Do you remember what Jesus said to him? He said, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Why did Jesus say Peter had little faith, even after stepping out of the boat, and yet this Canaanite woman had great faith, even though many believed in him? I thought about that for a while, and I think this is what it boils down to. I think Peter had every spiritual opportunity you could ask for, right? He was a Jew. He was being trained personally by Jesus. He had all the spiritual opportunities that you could want. He knew the Old Testament law. He had the training and the teaching, not to mention being with Jesus for years, 24/7, seeing the miracles, seeing the healings. He just saw 5,000 men. On top of that, women and children, probably 15,000 to 20,000 people fed from just a couple loaves and fishes. He saw the dead raised, and yet he wavered in his faith. And Jesus says, oh, you of little faith. And yet, this woman didn't have any of those experiences. She wasn't a Jew. She had a different religious background. She didn't have a full understanding of Jesus as the Messiah. She didn't witness all the miracles. She didn't see the healings. She'd only heard of him. She wasn't a disciple. She had no religious title. Her spiritual resume, if you want to say it that way, was completely unimpressive. There was nothing there. But she knew who Jesus was. She knew what Jesus could do. She came and humbly asked him and believed that she would receive what she needed. She truly, even without all of those spiritual background things, she still believed that Jesus could do what she asked him to do. And that's what made her faith great. Let me say it this way for us. Don't let your spiritual pedigree and your background and your experiences and your godly heritage become a hindrance to the faith that you should be demonstrating in your life. If one who had so little, and it, by the way, this plays out all over the world today, if those who have so little can trust him so greatly, what about us who have so much? Should we not be able to display great faith? Someone once wisely said, with great power comes great responsibility. But I would say for believers, with great privilege comes even greater responsibility. Those of us who have been saved for many years, who have all the spiritual blessings and heritage that God has given. Praise God for those things. I'm so thankful for that in my own life. But I fear that sometimes with great spiritual blessing comes great spiritual apathy. We should be teachers. We should be mature. We should be displaying great faith. We should be pointing people to Jesus, not turning them away. God, help us to have this kind of great faith. God has given us so much. Let's display a great faith with all that we have. And then thirdly, and just quickly, we'll finish this, the gospel. Just this passage reminds me that the gospel is for all people in all places. The Pharisees forgot. In fact, the disciples even forgot that they were that what they had was not because of who they were. God chose the nation of Israel simply because he desired to. There was nothing lovely in them. I mean, just read Ezekiel chapter 16. God choosing the nation of Israel had nothing to do with them. It wasn't because they were lovely. It wasn't because they had something special in them. They experienced the blessings of God because of God's mercy and God's grace to them. They didn't deserve it any more than the Canaanite woman did. We, this morning, I think we understand this. We're not special people. It's not because of anything that I did or who I was. I think we realize as we come together as a church that we are broken and sinful people who have simply experienced the mercy and the grace of God in our life because of God's goodness to us. It wasn't because of my nationality. It wasn't because of my spiritual heritage. It was because God looked on me and had compassion on me, and in his mercy, reached down to me in my sinful state and saved me. All glory to him and none to me. The point is this, that's how God views this whole world. He is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to this place of repentance and faith. Every nation, every tribe, every people group, every language, every person, God's mercy is to all. So let's share that.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. My prayer is that God would use the preaching of his word in your life in a special way. If there's any way that we can be a help to you, please feel free to reach out at bibcinfo@gmail.com. Or if you're in the area, you're always welcome to come join us in worshiping the Lord together every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and Wednesday at 6:30. May the Lord bless you today.